Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today, I'm broadcasting out of Denver, Colorado, where it's 70-plus degrees, and I have on the line with me today co-producer Joe Caruso. Joe, how's the weather up in Maryland these days?
You know what? We have we lost winter. Winter, got tired and went away. And I think it's gonna. It may even hit 80 degrees today. But we've got a lot of fog, so it hasn't burned off yet. But we've got flowers. We've got tulips. We have it all.
Well, I think you still might get a little touch of winter, but I agree with you. It's probably long gone as the. As spring is definitely here. And talking about spring, you know, we're springing into a really hot time on Franchise Today. Today we have Ron Feldman from Franchise America Finance and Siegel Capital. We'll be talking about franchise finance and credit access and a couple of other things. And then next week we have Brad Fishman on. Who'll be giving us a summary of the Franchise Unconference, which just ended. And then, of course, we have the IFA will be providing a guest for us the following week to talk about the Small Business Lending Summit. And then, Joe, right after that, we lead into 7 weeks of a third annual franchise legal series, which, like I said, is going to run 7 weeks. It's our third one. We'll announce the entire lineup next week. As you know, attorneys are always juggling schedules, so we have to accommodate. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect in the upcoming legal series.
Well, I think we can expect the great quality content that we've had in the previous 2 years. We will probably be changing up on some of the subject matter, but it's really going to be about compliance, best practices, what are people doing now, in terms of topics like FPRs, financial performance representations, how to make them work in your franchise system, how to make your franchise disclosure document more of a sales tool and make it work for you. And we always like to talk about mitigating risk. Franchisors sometimes throw caution to the wind and do things that seem expedient, seem simple, but turn out to be not so good for them. So it's going to be an ounce of prevention, but done in a proactive way, so that you can make this work for growth in your brand and in your franchise system.
I'm definitely looking forward to it. I know I always learn something talking with some of the bright minds in the legal community within franchising. And next week, I have the Franchise Sales and Marketing Summit 2012 going on. We've been getting a lot of feedback, positive feedback from franchisors and franchisees alike. As you know, we've divided that into 4 one-hour-long sessions spanning the length of 4 days. That starts Monday the 26th, goes through Thursday the 29th. Each session will cover a different topic. I will be facilitating and presenting alongside an expert guest on the subject of focus. And some of the people we have on the show have on the summit actually have been on the show in the past. On Monday the 26th, we'll be talking about consumer sales and customer experience with Mindy Gold. She's the director of sales at Listen 360. Was just named to the Women's Franchise Network, so congratulations, Mindy. On Tuesday, friends of all of us here on the show, doing social media and personal branding. That'll be Deborah Vilkas, the COO of Fishman Public Relations. Then on Wednesday, my partner on Fran Summit, Jeremy LeDuc, will be talking about local marketing and SEO. And then we'll wrap up on Thursday discussing embracing technology and adapting to change with Mele Atsdale, the CEO of SmartFinds Internet Marketing. So it really should be quite an event, and I'd like to shout out to a good friend of the show who's also going to be on the legal series again for the third time, Michael Webster, the strategic chair of the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers, who has been helping to promote the Franchisee Summit next week, and you could look at their blog site, 4 articles by each of the presenters next week. They're on there as well as on Franchise Essential site. So I know I've got a busy schedule coming up for sure. And, of course, talking about busy, I don't think there's many people in the world of franchising that might be as busy as today's guest with such a hot topic of franchise finance and credit access and Obamanomics and everything else that's going on out there. And he's one of the foremost experts, of course, on franchise financing and, in particular, SBA 7A and 504 lending programs. He's been leading the charge in Washington, D.C. to open up access to credit for franchise business owners. And Joe and I are pleased to have him on Franchise today once again. Welcome back to our good friend Ron Feldman, CEO of Seed Capital and Franchise America Finance.
Well, thanks, Paul. And I was actually one of the participants in the UN conference that Brad's going to be talking about. And when the show's over, I'll give you some special questions to ask him that might embarrass him.
Okay, that would be great. I think we did that once before, so it seems we always have the 1-2 punch of you followed up by Brad, so I definitely look forward to that. We'll leave that. I won't get into the UN conference. I heard some things, but I'm definitely looking forward to discuss it. You know, Ron, you know, whether you're a franchisee, a franchisor, a supplier to franchising, it certainly seems that access to credit and the ability of franchisees to fund their new unit development is certainly a perennial topic. Is the key question, you know, is the franchise lending environment actually improving?
Yes, it's improving dramatically. You know, looking back 2 years, nothing was getting done. A year ago, some deals were getting done, and this year, great qualified operators looking to expand their networks are able to get lending done pretty regularly. Where it's still completely disconnected is in the first unit startup corporate refugee environment and in the environment where the brands haven't really done the job that they need to do either operationally or from a disclosure perspective to get access to credit for their franchisees.
It's I have heard that, you know, it has been loosening up some. Some of my clients have had new franchisees secure some SBA financing, which is always great to hear. I think we still have a ways to go. I've seen some of the reports about the projected growth in franchising. I guess we'll all live with 2-3% and be happy that it's in the black and not the red. Is the improvement across the board in franchising, or are certain sectors gaining more credit access traction than others?
I would say it's across the board, not sector by sector. I wouldn't say that QSR is doing better than healthcare or better than retail. I think it's a brand by brand decision whether, you know, a bank is going to loan money, and a lot of that has to do with what the disclosure the bank has relative to that particular borrower or that particular system. The banking environment is one of fear. It's still there. The fear of the regulator, the fear of the auditor, the fear of the Inspector General's office as it relates to SBA. They want to make sure that they have done diligence at a level that will pass that scrutiny of the regulator, not just the credit officer in the bank. And in doing that, the file needs to be properly papered to show that the bank did their diligence, not only on the borrower, but also on the franchise system.
I see. Joe, you know, we talk a lot about franchise finance, credit access, growth, system sustainability. Do you have any questions for Ron with respect to what he just talked about?
Well, you know, in terms of sectors, Ron, why do you think some franchisors are having more success with lenders as opposed to others that aren't? What differentiates the success rates between the ones that are successful and ones that are not?
I think a lot of it has to do with, it's funny. The guy who taught me about franchising was a guy named Tony Martino, and he started three franchise companies that, two that bore his name. One is Amco, one is Mako, and the other was Goddard Schools. And I was actually a franchisee of Goddard. One of the sage lessons he taught me early on was franchising is easy. Just make sure your franchisees make money. And that we tend to overcomplicate things. If franchisees are making money, not only to pay the bank back, but to feed their families, those are the systems that you're seeing access to credit ease up in, because they can show an underwriter cash flow on their existing operations that facilitates growth. One of the big disconnects I have with some of the franchise systems out there are, specifically in the restaurant space, where they put out development schedules where you have to open 5 units in 3 years. Well, what if the first one's not making money? Why would you ever want to open a second one? And if you did open a second one, you'll have 2 marginal performers instead of 1 marginal performer. So it's really about those. And Daryl Johnson says, the 2 words are performance matters. If the system is performing, access to credit is there. Now, there are always good operators and bad systems, and those folks are also going to be getting access to credit because they're showing their cash flow. Again, the disconnect is in unit 1 of a young or emerging system or one that doesn't have the proper financial disclosures that a banker can actually see. Will have a real tough time getting access to credit right now.
It's interesting, Ron. You bring up the restaurant sector and audacious development schedules. I think a dirty little secret in restaurant franchising is that the larger the development agreement, the less likely it's going to happen. And even if it does happen, the best laid plans of mice and men at the onset of that development agreement, you're going to modify that agreement down the road. The other thing that a lot of franchisors are loath to do is to terminate a development agreement when the development objectives haven't been met. And I think the profitability aspect is certainly front and center in reasons why they're not met, and also the qualifications and from a financial standpoint of the people that they're entering into the development agreement with. Those franchisees may not have really had the requisite capital to fund that development agreement. So right-sizing your development objectives with the operational and financial capabilities of franchisees, in my mind, would seem imperative, but certain people seem to lose sight of that.
Well, some people just get caught in the air of, I signed up, a 10-unit deal. Well, let's see how many of those actually open and when they open.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion for another day. Ron,
we could have another show on that.
Yeah, we definitely could. As part of your commitment to the IFA, and I know you are very, very actively involved at the IFA, and if anybody sees you at the IFA convention, obviously they can see all the banners hanging off your name tag. Definitely a testament to your commitment and to franchising. And you've been very active in the lobbying efforts on Capitol Hill. In meeting with both elected and government officials on the topic of lending, what has surprised you most in your conversations?
I guess at the macro level, the Fed doesn't really care too much about small business because the dollars involved in small business are minuscule compared to the dollars involved to run the economy. So at that level, it's almost a rounding figure. From the small business two sides, from the House and from the Senate, they truly do care specifically. I'd give a shout out to Mary Landrieu and Olympia Snow. Unfortunately, Olympia is not running for re-election. They've actually both taken more of a centrist role in trying to get things done and not gotten caught up in partisan things, and have actually been able to get real good and proactive and positive legislation through. With regard to the Small Business Jobs Act passed a couple of years ago. There's a little bit of ambivalence and what's in it for my constituents role. And then partisan politics just play such a role in all of that seems like they've moved on to bigger and better things. Specifically now, you've got some real big – Obamacare is the next big thing that you're going to see, depending on both the Supreme Court decision coming up and the election, as to how much that law gets enacted or defunded or funded. And David Barr of the IFA has done an amazing job of tearing apart – he actually read the whole bill. I dare anyone to ask their congressman if they actually read it, that's now the law of the land. And his conclusions are that the typical QSR operator is going to lose 2 points of margin by having this law enacted in 2014. That means if you're making EBITDA of 18%, your EBITDA is now 16%, and that really doesn't incent too many people to keep growing.
Right.
When you've got a 2% royalty on top of your franchisor's royalty coming from Uncle Sam for healthcare. So it's that's the hottest topic right now. And the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, the appointments that were just made that are all pro-union is disguised as, we were fighting card check for however many years in terms of unionizing small business. And now they're just trying to do it by having a friendlier, pro-union NLRB. Those are the two really hot things. And the state of California has just put a bill in place that is really anti-franchising as well. So there's a lot of fights on Capitol Hill, but it seems like Capitol Access, that we did what we could do. The Small Business Jobs Act is there. It's still a very high priority. But what IFA's done there is we've gotten all of the bankers' associations together with the IFA so that we can better educate the bankers and the bankers can better educate us on what they need. And we've opened a dialogue together through the Small Business Lending Summit last year and all the work that's been done since then. Beth Solomon's done an amazing job at the IFA of fostering that communication. Steve Caldera actually addressed the Consumer Bankers Association last week on franchising. And what we have now is a better understanding between the banking community and the franchising community as to what a franchise loan is like, what kind of performance a banker can expect, and what kind of a package the banker would need in order to approve a franchise loan. So, big kudos to the IFA to do that.
It seems the IFA has really been just stepping up at a rapid pace, just by looking at the press releases coming out, it seems that for the last week we had several Labor Department proposal harm seniors. There was another one about small business tax cut, which spurred job creation by franchise business owners, a media advisory about the new franchise business index to launch actually today. And then, of course, economic health of the franchise industry is stronger compared to a year ago. We're leading into the Small Business Lending Summit. Like you said, Steve Caldera addressed the bankers. I mean, a lot of stuff going on in a very positive direction, even though we're still dealing with some negativity. And I think, the question that I really have on my mind is the typical person you're speaking with in Washington, do they really understand the U.S. franchise statistics and the economic impact of franchising?
Their staffers might. I don't know that the actual congressperson does. there's a great resource on the IFA's website that any franchisee could actually drill down to their congressional district what the impact of franchising is within their district. That is something that should be put in front of every congressperson in the United States. And they've, you know, IFA started Franchise Congress, which is a franchisee-driven initiative, because Congress people and senators care about who's in their constituency more so than they care about what I have to say or you have to say or a franchisor has to say. So it really has to be a grassroots thing driven by franchisees. And the other thing that's interesting is this year, the IFA FranPAC, the Political Action Committee, is going to hit or has already hit $1 million in pledges for this cycle. And that puts us in a very good position to get access to lawmakers, specifically small business-friendly lawmakers. And I would urge everyone here, if you're not a participant in FranPAC, to become a participant in FranPAC. And if you are already a participant, to please actually send your pledge money in so that it can be deployed during this ever-important election cycle this year. And the way to do that is just go on the IFA website, www.franchise.org, and click on FranPAC, and you'll be able to take care of those things.
So as we talk about what our listeners can do, is there anything else they can do specifically to get their legislators up to speed on the importance of franchising and franchise lending and credit access?
Well, you just have to open your mouth and talk to them and go to their local offices and, you know, understand that you're speaking with a staffer, especially with a senator. There's only two per state, so it's hard to get access to a senator. But if, you know, if you're in your local congressional district, you should be able to get, and if you wait long enough, a meeting with that person. And it's an election year, so they want to hear from their constituents and what's important to them. And if you, especially if you're an employer within their district, and you know that Obamacare is going to make you not want to open another unit, you know, they need to hear that. They might not want to hear it, but they need to hear it. So, again, it's about a grassroots effort. Franchise Congress can give you the tools that you need in terms of handouts, flyers, all those things. It's clearly an effort that has to start at the local level and work its way up, rather than high-powered lobbyists going in and trying to do things.
You know, back in the fall, American Express had their Small Business Saturday, and they basically excluded franchising from Small Business Saturday. It was in some of their documents that franchise locations were not to be part of it. And I went kind of on a one-man crusade and finally got to talk with an executive VP of American Express that ultimately was in charge of the entire Small Business Saturday initiative. And she basically said to me, you know, that they missed the boat because, you know, they were looking at franchising as more along the lines of, you know, the McDonald's, and she had all kinds of misperceptions about franchising. And it really made me shake my head to think about, you know, you think about corporate America, you assume there's a relative level of education. Franchising is such a big part of the economy. And when I heard that, it just made me cringe to think that there's so many people outside of franchising, including the people up on Capitol Hill, that just really don't understand franchising or maybe don't have quite the thought about franchising as we do being in it. So, you know, what do our friends in Washington think of franchising generally?
I think there's a bit of ignorance, you know, similar to what you had. And that's why, you know, the importance of every September when IFA has their public affairs conference and we go up on the Hill and actually try and educate at least the staffers of each of these folks on what franchising is. And believe it or not, one of the things I think that's educating America on franchising is the TV show Undercover Boss. Seems like every week there's another franchise company being highlighted on it. I don't want to steal from Brad's thunder about the Unconference, but there was a wonderful panel of people that have been on Undercover Boss that actually spoke about what it meant to their companies. But, you know, I was a franchisee in a preschool system where, you know, you owned one unit. They really didn't want you to own more than one unit. So what you were is a mom-and-pop business that employed 25 or 30 local people and provided a service to the community that's greatly needed. And I would bet that there aren't too many people on Capitol Hill that actually understand that. And we just have to keep educating them. You know, their faces change every 2 years in Congress for the most part. So you can't just say you did it and you're done. You have to keep going. It's an ongoing effort.
Yeah, and just when you think you've got it, they change the faces and you have to start all over again. Yeah, I could understand
absolutely.
That. You know, you know, in one of your recent talks on franchise finance, you mentioned that it's important for both a franchisor and franchisee to know what league they're in terms of investment size, system size. Why is that important?
Well, I'll talk first about investment size. There's a cost to a bank to write an SBA loan, and I'll speak specifically to SBA. And that cost doesn't change whether it's a $30,000 loan or a $3 million loan. The same level of documentation has to happen because SBA requires it. So banks are not going to do small $50,000 or $100,000 startup SBA loans in the 7A program because it costs them too much to originate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a lot of franchisors trying to go out and get SBA loans in many of the smaller investment size brands when their chances of success are minuscule. There's another product called SBA Express, but that only carries with it a 50% guarantee. So a bank is going to have to weigh that against somebody starting a brand new business that has no history. So from the investment size piece, you really need to know what banks are looking at in terms of a minimum loan size and see if you fit in. And if you don't, then don't go there because you're just going to keep rowing upstream and you're not going to get anywhere. From a system standpoint, I can't tell you how many times I see an FDD where they might have had, you know, 10 company-owned units before they franchised but don't disclose any of the metrics in their FDD in item 19 about those units, so the banker doesn't understand the brand, doesn't understand the metrics behind the brand, and how can they make an intelligent decision on whether to make a loan? It doesn't make any sense to a banker. So there's a whole level of disclosure that needs to happen because that one thing I know bankers aren't going to do, and when you have that item 19 that is the blank one that says we make no representation, whatever that paragraph of death is what I call it, a banker is not going to call other franchisees to get validation on how much money that their borrower is going to make. They're just going to throw the application in the trash. And that's really why, specifically when you have a younger brand, a less mature brand, or a brand entering a new market for the first time, you really need to put together a franchisee toolkit that they can go to the bank with. And part of that toolkit might be you going with them to the bank when you're entering a new market and creating relationships or outsourcing it to somebody who there are folks out there that will actually work on your behalf to find banks to lend, both virtual and in person. So there are a lot of tools out there that are available to franchise systems. But you have to understand where you stand and only try and play in those areas.
Right. We're on Franchise Today. We're speaking to Ron Feldman, CEO of Siegel Capital and Franchise America Finance. Today's topic is Franchise Finance version, Franchise Finance 2012 version 3.0. You know, Joe, as you were putting together the talking points and some of the questions for today's show, you came up with that title. What was your thoughts behind version 3.0?
Well, version 3.0, you know, we've been, you know, three years plus into the our Great Recession, and this is the third time that Ron's been on our show, so to talk about this same subject, and we dive deeper, and each time he's on, and there's always new news on the forefront. I mean, you compare our show 1.0, if you will, with today's show, and there's a stark contrast to what the lending environment was back then and is today. So that's how I came up with the 3.0.
Ron, do you think that's the case?
Absolutely. And it changes, I don't want to say on a daily basis. It used to change on a daily basis, but now it's a little more predictable. But certainly quarter to quarter, you're seeing banks dipping their toes in. You're seeing some banks retreating. It's the SBA has a real chance to change the face of small business. It's just very, very onerous and difficult to go through the process of getting an SBA loan. For both the borrower and for the bank. And it's costly because if you have to devote resources to it, it costs money. So things change pretty dynamically right now. But I think it certainly quarter by quarter the market changes.
You know, in your discussion with franchisors, do you find that they're actually doing enough to help their franchise system get financing?
Really good ones do. Again, if franchisees are making money, then it's important for the franchisor to create some kind of a document. I rely personally on the bank credit report from FranData to show me when a brand calls me about putting together a program for their franchisees, the first question I ask them is, can you send me your bank credit report, not can you send me your FDD? Franchisors who think their FDD is a sales document are sadly mistaken. I've been saying for 4 years now, your FDD is not your friend with banks. It's written by lawyers to protect you. That's what it's done for. And it shouldn't be the document that you put in front of a banker. First of all, the average FDD is about 400 pages now, so they're certainly not going to read it cover to cover. So good franchisors are doing a lot of the things that we've been preaching in terms of best practices to having a strong item 19, not just gross sales. Taking item 20 and spreading it out to explain each reason for store closures, so that bankers can understand that it wasn't just people closing up shop because they failed operationally. And putting those things into a format like a bank credit report to let bankers understand in their own terms and language what they're getting themselves into relative to making a loan to that brand. Those are the franchisors that are getting loans done. The ones that aren't ascribing to those best practices are having a much tougher time, unless you're a brand like McDonald's, where you have national brand awareness and proven operators that you don't need to do all those things.
So how difficult, and this is probably a loaded question, how difficult is it going to be for the literally hundreds, if not thousands, of franchisors that are basically startup and just on the verge of emerging? Because we go to the IFA convention, we have 400 or 500 brands there, a lot of strong ones, and we hear all these statistics, and I say that loosely, that there's 3,000 to 4,000 franchisors. So we think about 400 or 500 that are represented at the IFA, maybe another several hundred that are involved at the IFA but don't go to the convention. So let's just say for roundabout sake, 1,000. That still leaves 2,000 to 3,000 others. How difficult is it going to be for them to secure financing moving forward if a lot of the focus is on, you know, unit economics, getting franchisees to make money, brand awareness, et cetera, et cetera.
That goes back to one of my fundamental issues with the whole franchise marketplace, and that is if I write an FDD and I don't have a business model that works, I can be a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a fundamental problem with that. If you're going to franchise your business, the first thing you need to know is if your economic model works. And you need to do that by having company stores that actually operate and earn a profit. And not only that, earn a profit, but you manage it as though it was a franchise unit. You know, you have in your P&Ls what the imputed royalties and ad fund would be, so that you can show a prospective franchisee that there is a predictable model. What are you doing when you're buying a franchise? You're buying a brand, and more importantly, you're buying a system. And if your system doesn't show that you can earn money, you won't get money. I can tell you that I work with a couple of brands that have 20 and 30 units who have shown me that franchisees can make money, and we get loans done for those brands.
That
because I can show a banker that the franchisee has a chance to make money. Franchisors who, when they're starting up, create XYZ franchising, LLC, and say nothing about their company units anywhere in their FDD because their lawyers told them not to, and capitalize their franchisor with $100,000 in the bank. And all that, when a banker looks at the back of the FDD, at the financial statements of the franchisor, and sees that they have no sales and $100,000 in the bank, how does that make the banker feel about lending money to that franchisee in that system? It really comes down to common sense. Bankers have a silly thing now. The mirror and breath test doesn't work anymore, where you used to be, if you fog the mirror, you got a loan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bankers really want to get repaid now. And in order for them to get repaid, they need to know going in that they have a chance of getting repaid. So a lot of it has to do with not just disclosure, but performance.
You know, I know Joe has a question because I know he thinks a lot about FDDs and FPRs, but I want to bring up one point because we've done, seven or eight shows now on Franchise Today over the last couple of years. You've been involved in three of them. Daryl Johnson's been involved. We've had, you know, Bob Coleman, the editor and publisher of the Coleman Report. We've had various people on. And you brought up a great term, common sense. And I seem to hear the words common sense more on our shows about franchise finance than on any other show. And you're right, it makes sense. I remember Daryl Johnson talking about that a couple of years ago and said, you know, if you just looked at this from a common sense perspective, you realize that, you know, things were going to blow up. And you're mentioning about common sense with respect to the FTD and unit economics and franchisees making money. And, you know, why is it so hard for people to not have that common sense? I mean, is it fear? Are they trying to hide something? Are they lazy? Are they complacent? Was it just too easy and they're not willing to do the work moving forward? Or probably all of the above, kind of more rhetorical question. Joe, I know you have a question or two about FDDs and FPRs.
Well, you know, and Ron brings up an interesting point about common sense and franchisors, and there is no test for a franchisor to go out and take before they create a franchise disclosure document and a franchise agreement and begin to sell. There are some states that have some requirements, but it's mostly financial. And I think that there is an unknown number of franchisors that begin franchising, sell one or two, or sell none, and fail. I think there are a number of franchisors out there that I would put in the category of zombie franchisors. They've got an FTC document. Maybe they're not registered in registration states. They're franchising, but they're not really franchising. And they may have a few franchisees, and I don't know if I'd want to be one of the franchisees in a zombie franchise system. But it is very curious, and there are many paths to becoming an ill-fated franchisor, getting the wrong advice on the front end, going to a document mill with somebody that says, I can put you a non-lawyer that will
put you into franchising, and they'll do your franchise disclosure document, they'll do your franchise agreement, and charge you a fee, something less than the attorney's fee, and you think you've saved a lot of money, but it turns out to be a false economy. You know, common sense, I think it's obvious, but in terms of how some of these franchisors become get into the business, it's ill-fated from the start. In terms of franchise performance representations, item 19, I'm with Ron on this one. I don't think there's a good reason not to have one. And I think if you're going to become a franchisor, you ought to have proof of concept at the get-go. You ought to know that it can work from a unit economic standpoint for franchisees. Because if it doesn't, you're going to either fail as a franchisor or you're going to become a zombie franchisor.
You know, Ron,
the ones that make the money when that doesn't work are the lawyers.
Yeah.
That's what I always say. Don't give the lawyer give the lawyers your money up front and get the right lawyers and the right accountants up front. And don't go to a document mill. Go to a lawyer that understands franchising and will give you the quality document that you need, or will say to you, more importantly, you're not ready. The great lawyers, you know, out there, you know, the Lane Fishers of the world, they're gonna say you're not ready yet. You need another year.
Absolutely.
And you don't know how much money they're saving you by doing that.
Especially when you talk about Lane, who's an advocate for FBRs, and the guy really knows how to put them together. And a franchisor can go to him and say, I can't do an FBR, and by golly, he will figure out a way for you to be able to demonstrate profitability of your brand. Now, the concept has to be proven. I mean, he can't sew a purse out of a sow's ear, but certainly he's a great advocate of FPRs, and he's a practitioner of being able to get them done.
Absolutely, we look. Well,
and you really have to do more.
Again.
Go ahead, Paul.
I'm sorry, I was saying we look forward to having Lane on again on the third annual legal series. The first two he talked about. FPRs, and I would say to date, both of those shows are probably in the top three as far as listenership, so it definitely is a hot topic. Ron, you mentioned before that the FDD is not your friend with a bank. You also mentioned that, you know, go to, you know, an attorney that, you know, knows what they're doing. Don't go to a document mill, as Joe said, and you confirmed as well. So in this world of, you know, FDD, franchise disclosure document, the FPRs, you know, how does a lender look at a franchisor's FDD, and where do they focus their attention most?
Well, if you're a great franchisor, you have a bank credit report, and they're looking at that in lieu of the FDD. They have to have the FDD. But a lender who understands franchising, and there's a difference between lenders that understand franchising or program lenders or transactional lenders where they're just looking at a transaction and may not be looking at the brand. But the logical places they're going to look, if you know, look in the table of contents, is they're always going to look at the litigation. They're always going to look at the resumes of management, and then they're going to skip all the other stuff, you know, for the most part. They're not going to care about territory, and they're not going to care about all that others. They're going to look at item 19, they're going to look at item 20, and they're going to look at the franchisor's financial statements. Those are the things that a typical non-franchise program lender is going to look at in an FDD if that's all they have to look at. And if your item 20 says that, you know, 10% of your units have ceased operations due to operations, they're just going to throw the application away. But if 8 of those 10 didn't open because the person couldn't get financing during the recession and you really only had 2, it tells a different story. So you really have to manage your disclosure within the law, and that's why you need great lawyers. If you're FPR, I just read an FPR where it says it was only a gross sales, item 19, and it said sales range from $300,000 to $1.8 million for a brand. Well, that doesn't tell me anything.
Yeah, no.
It's better to not have one.
Right.
So You really have to tell your story through your documents. And it's the same thing we say to franchisees when they're going to borrow money. Your documents have to tell your story. And if you can't do that, you have to have a toolkit to do that or hire somebody to write it for you.
For the benefit of our listeners, you spoke about transactional lenders and program lenders. Can you explain the difference between the two?
What I do in Franchise America Finance is we're a program lender, where we actually look at the brand. We say, we like your brand. We want to give money to your franchise, or lend money, not give money, to your franchisees. We want to get repaid. And we're going to allocate X dollars to your brand for your franchisees. We're going to create a lending program for your franchisees. The program lender model works in well-established brands, 100-plus units. They have to be – one of our litmus tests is, we call it royalty self-sufficiency. They can't have – in other words, their royalty income has to cover 100% of their operations. We don't want to lend money to a franchisor who needs that $45,000 franchise fee to make payroll. So that's kind of what a program lender is. A transactional lender is the local community bank or regional bank, where the person in that community comes in and says, I want to apply for a loan to open a Goddard school. And they will then start from there. So one is franchisor-initiated and one is franchisee-initiated. It's probably the easiest way to say that.
And I would imagine the due diligence is different between the two.
Well, sure. On a program, if I'm only going to lend to one franchisee, I don't need to do the level of diligence that
sure.
I need to do if I'm going to lend to 50 franchisees. So, the program lenders will do a much deeper dive, and they probably have a portfolio of loans in that brand already that they can measure their performance on as well. So we really focus more on the program and less on the transaction in our company. And we've got
right.
25 brands that we've got a $500 million available to. So it's really it's worked out very well.
So from a practical standpoint, what can a franchisor do to make their franchise investment attractive to lenders?
Well, first thing they need to do is take stock of where their unit economics are. And they have to tell their story through their unit-level economics, because the lender doesn't care if the franchisor is widely profitable if the franchisees are not.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to start at the grassroots unit economic level. Are my units profitable? If they're profitable, you start from there, and that's how you tell your story. You should lend to my brand because my franchisees make enough money to feed their families and pay the bank back. And you can't do that through an FDD. It's impossible to do that through an FDD. You need some other document. And bankers are very happy to sign non-disclosure agreements, and bankers aren't protected by the FTC rules the way a prospective franchisee would be. So you need to tell your story that way. The best way to do that, in my opinion, again, is the bank credit report or an addendum to the bank credit report, or you just put together your own lender's addendum that you can share with banks to disclose to the bank why they should make that loan to your brand.
And maybe this is a myth or not, but I've heard from some people, or some people say that, let's say you have a brand that has 20 locations, a banker looks at the item 19 and other documents, and it shows, the gross sales for all 19 locations. He comes up with, figure in his mind whether they're profitable or not, and, of course, then there's, one straggler behind the pack. Is it true that a banker looks at that straggler at the bottom of the heap and says, what happens if that's my loan? I mean, are bankers thinking that deep into it today?
I think they're looking, the ones we look more at the average, not the bottom. We also take a deep dive as a program lender into why the franchisor selects franchisees. What goes into their not only the financial qualifications, but more importantly, the operational qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the average, and if they, you know, we expect our borrowers to be average, and if they're better than average, good for us, and if they're not better than average, shame on us. We don't look at the worst case scenario because, you know, you're also always going to have that one franchisee that, God forbid, had cancer in their family and they're distracted, or the road's carved up in front of their store and they didn't perform this year. So we don't look at that. We look at the average.
Okay. I mean, and I think it's a good point, you know, looking at the system, looking at their franchise sales process, how they pick franchisees, their operations, et cetera, because without any of that, you know, obviously unit economics is going to be lagging behind. You know, changing gears a bit as we're getting close to the top of the hour, I understand Franchise America Finance has launched a new vehicle leasing initiative called FranFleet. Why vehicle leasing?
Well, there's one of the funny things is everyone asks me that question, and my answer is I got sick and tired of saying no to 99 people that I talked to. I wanted to be able to say yes. And there are you know, hundreds of brands in franchising that are mobile based. You know, big brands like the Dwyer Group, you know, with all of their brands underneath their umbrella, you know, all the way to you know, great brands like Hoods and Ducks, and those brands are all based out of a vehicle, or more importantly, if they're good, a fleet of vehicles that are very difficult at the without having scale to buy right and to put together. So if you what we did is we took all of that pain away from the franchisee, and we have created a program that allows for the vehicle to get delivered to their local dealership. We have a national agreement with Fast Signs, if that's who they want to use, to actually put the graphics or the wrap on that vehicle. We'll take whatever equipment needs to be installed inside that vehicle and work with those vendors to have it installed, and the vehicle then gets delivered to the franchisee ready and able to be deployed. And we take all that and we finance it in one lease payment. So they're not juggling to do all those things. We also work with the franchisor to make sure the right graphics are delivered so that it's not the old graphics or the old logo or non-compliant graphics on the vehicle. And then we offer fleet management to that franchisee so that they can see what their mileage per vehicle is, when they're due for an oil change, when all those things, should they elect to participate in it, are all available to them as well. And we prepackage that all in. We also work on when that vehicle should be cycled. You know, is it at 60,000 miles? Is it at 80,000 miles? So we've taken a very comprehensive look at the mobile brands and think that there's a giant market there for somebody to come in at a franchisee-level friendly program, and that's why we launched it.
So how does FranFleet differ from its competitors?
I don't know that there's a whole lot of competitors out there that will deal at the level that we will, which is one vehicle. There's a lot of fleet management companies out there, and a lot of them require 9, 10, 12 vehicles, which with when you're in a company environment, that's fine. But the person buying their first, you know, Ducks franchise has one truck.
I see.
So we're offering the same service to that person that the 10 person to the 10 vehicle person has. We also have national buying power with our bank, where we have fleet numbers that allow us to buy at a much lower level than anyone walking into a dealership can, because we buy so many vehicles. So the franchisee ultimately saves money.
Okay, and obviously they can interested parties can look on the Franchise America Finance website.
Yeah, either that or we created a landing page called franfleet.com. And they can just look there, and they can reach out, and we can certainly look to help them.
Great. Well, Ron, any parting comments for today's listeners, whether it be on access to capital, access to, you know, credit, I mean, the franchise finance scenario, Obamacare, or FranFleet, any parting comments?
Well, I just, Paul, I think you do a great service to the industry, first of all, you and Joe, and I commend you for doing this.
Appreciate it.
And if it's a franchisee listening out there, you need to get involved. You need to get involved on the advocacy level. You need to go on franchise.org, get involved with Franchise Congress, become a donor to FranPAC. And if you're a franchisor or an employee of a franchisor, you also need to get involved in giving your franchisees the tools that they need to succeed. You give them an operations manual. You give them all those other tools to run their business. You also have to give them the tools to access credit. And a lot of that has to do with managing their P&Ls, knowing not only what the gross sales are, because we all know franchisors get paid royalties on gross, but you need to know if they're making money. And if they're not making money, you need to help them. Or fix your system. So those would be my parting comments from both sides of the fence.
Joe, any parting comments on today's show?
I'll just add what Ron just said. Franchisors who are not getting good reporting from their franchisees, who are not getting P&Ls from top to bottom to know how profitable their franchisees, what their debt service is, make sure that they've captured all their debt, in terms of if they've got a loan from a bank, but they also did a home equity line of credit. Make sure you know where they are and if their EBITDA is covering their expenses. I know of way too many franchisors that are not collecting that data, and the excuses are myriad, but I don't think there's a good excuse. And it's a great place to start, and it will help improve their system and improve the growth of their franchisees and the ability to get credit.
I agree. Ron, I thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule, for being a guest again on Franchise Today, and certainly I appreciate your kind words. We do try to give back as much as possible to the franchise community, and it's franchise professionals like yourself and a host of others that so graciously give up their time in order to come on Franchise Today and share what we feel are franchise best practices. I know Joe goes through a great effort in working out the questions and the talking points, and there really is a lot that goes on behind the scenes. There's a lot of time that goes into every show, the planning, the scheduling, the coordinating, and then, of course, out of all of our personal schedules. And it's really great to hear somebody like yourself recognize that and tell us that. We really do appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Franchise Today will be airing again next week on Thursday. That'll be March 29th. Brad Fishman will be my guest. He's the CEO of Fishman Public Relations. And he'll be talking about the Franchise Unconference. And hopefully we'll be able to get some questions to ask Brad out of Ron after today's show. So that really should be interesting. Joe, thanks for being on the show, being involved with the show as always. Really do appreciate it. Until next week, my name is Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.